Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 29th, 2020. A lot of topics to cover tonight, and I'm really not going to go into the election or politics at all. Just a couple quick notes that there's a lot of controversy going on about the different methods of voting, and I've said this before, the methods of cheating have increased dramatically in the last 4 years. I talked a bit about this last week, but remember that my three different methods of mathematical regression analysis in the 2016 election showed that Hillary Clinton got 17 million illegal votes that just weren't there. They were just magically counted out of 10 major cheating centers. But that amounted to 13% of the total votes. So 17 million divided by the estimated number of votes cast in the 2016 election amounted to around 13%. And that would have been enough in any election to just provide a massive landslide victory, and she still lost. But this time they're ramping up for even more. So at any rate, I hope that most of you have the time, ability to go down, register, and be an observer at your local precinct, because that is where the majority of cheating happens. There have been a number of deaths that occurred in the vaccine trials. Now, most of the vaccine trials are occurring in foreign countries, and I guess there's a reason for that, because right now there are deaths that are being clocked in these foreign countries in the COVID-19 vaccine trials. But what they do is, in foreign countries, they can just kind of sweep it under the rug, and they go, well, people die all the time, so no big deal. You know, you give somebody a shot, a vaccine that's supposed to be under test, they die, and they go, oh, well, what the heck, people die all the time, and write it off and continue testing. There have been a number of studies in the United States that have been shut down due to side effects, and they're typically the same type of side effects. But it appears that statistically, and I don't know how accurate these statistics are, but they're saying about 40% of the U.S. population will refuse to take a vaccine. And I don't want anything to do with somebody sticking a needle in me with something that you don't even know what it is. And then next year they're going to tell you, oh, by the way, there's going to be a new COVID next year. You're going to need a new shot. And then it's just like the flu shot. Oh, you need it every year. So, but this brings up the next topic. This is going around, so all the different media sites, and so I'm not going to go into a lot of details. So if you have not heard of this, it's called the Great Debt Reset, or the Great Reset. It's on the cover of Time magazine. Good grief, how much more blatant do you have to get? But the formula was to first build up massive debt. Absolutely massive debt, and the coronavirus is helping do that, because all of the countries have built up incredibly massive debts. The U.S. national debt has, I don't know if it's doubled in the last number of months, in the last 6 months, but just unbelievably massive debt, both in the nation, national level, the city level. And, of course, that's what the bailout and the holdout for the next bailed out bill is, because they want another $1 trillion to bail out the poorly run Democratic cities, and also where they had massive amounts of damage, absolutely incredible amounts of damage due to rioting that they just let run rampant. Build up massive debt. The second part of it then that comes along, then they say, okay, since you owe it, not the government who was elected allegedly and then created all of this debt, they put the debt on you, the taxpayer, and then They say, well, look, we're going to forgive all your debt, but you become essentially an indentured servant, which was outlawed in the Middle Ages. Indentured servitude, in other words, somebody who has a debt that they never can pay off and simply become slaves, was outlawed. Outlawed in the Middle Ages. And as a part of this debt forgiveness program, you sign off any property that you currently have, and of course they're going to get a lot of say students that are unemployed that have massive student debt. They're going to jump on this because, oh boy, they don't have any debt, and then they get a guaranteed income from the government. But indentured servitude, your kids' kids, grandchildren, great-grandchildren forever will be indentured servitude servants. And then part of this also is that you become vaccinated. So how does that have to do with the Great Debt Reset? And what you're seeing is that this is all a big plan. This was planned from the very beginning to create basically slaves of all the people in the world. And if you don't become vaccinated and you resist, you will be put in a public facility and you'll be given two choices. Either you do or you don't, and if you don't, then you become a certified public health risk. And at that point, they're probably going to take you off to the crematoriums. So anyway, that's where this is going, and they already have the name rolled out as COVID-21. And so, COVID-19, COVID-20, COVID-21 will be the iterations, and they say it'll be much worse. More people will be sick, and the lockdowns will be much more severe. This was, COVID-19 was just a test case to get, that's how they do this. They roll this out in steps. And so it's going to get ugly. And as far as the election, I predicted that the cheating will be so massive, and because they lost in 2016, and it's not just Democrat, Republican, it's the deep state, which goes over the boundaries of political partisanship. So anyway, I don't know where this is going. I'm not making any predictions, but no matter what, I think the United States is going to have serious problems in the future, and this is not going away. The people that are in charge of this great debt relief program, they're not going away. They're just biding their time, so to speak. They're bidening their time. This is all going to be in place, and they're going to roll it out. They had confidence decades ago when George Bush Sr. stated that this was coming, the New World Order, and he looked kind of slyly at the camera, and he goes, yes, and we will succeed. Like, you know, they're going to pull this off. Okay, enough of that. As far as the debate the other night, the only comment I'm going to make is that I thought the moderator was excellent. She kept on target, she kept on task, she kept them to their 10 minutes or 10 seconds or 30 seconds or 2 minute reply, etc. And so I thought that the moderator did pretty well. That's the only thing I'm going to say about the big debate. Other than that, I don't know. This country's in a world of hurt. The biggest issue that came out of it is that Trump is trying to get the military to enforce the vaccination. So, I don't know. This is not looking good for the hometown team. I did predict a long time ago, and this did happen this past week, I predicted that the Minneapolis courts would let off the policeman in the George Floyd case, and that part of that happened this past week. Although I didn't see the mass reaction to that I was expecting. Maybe I missed something, but that's what I predicted, to have maximum chaos. Just a this is a kind of a comical story from space.com. Now they're really pushing. The top story 2 days ago on space.com was the search for Planet 9. And they're really pushing this, that NASA's out there, they're looking for this planet that's beyond Pluto. And they found, they claim, over 1,200 red dwarfs that are allegedly not connected to our solar system, but they really don't know. They have not seen these for long enough. They're only maybe 5-10 years since they've discovered these, so they really don't have good orbits on these objects at all. But imagine that. Remember when you were a kid and you learned that there were 9 planets? Well, then there was 8. Because they got rid of Pluto, because they had found hundreds of other planets beyond Pluto that were like Pluto, Pluto-like planets, some bigger. And then now they're announcing that they have discovered 1,200 planets. And now this is what this is the comical part, that they are calling this the Citizen Science Project. And so they want citizens to help discover Planet 9. Wow. I mean, this is, if you go back in history and you watch, for example, when my book Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes came out, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, that was my first public release of my work, which, of course, goes back to the late 1970s. And in that book, in the appendices, were some of my publications, the early ones. And but anyway, the criticism, he's a Planet X. He believes in Planet X. And then they got after me. They said, you have to make a prediction as to when you think Planet X is going to be here. And I said, no, I don't. I've been studying this long before any of you clowns came up with this ongoing massive amount of people coming out talking about Planet X. I was working on this long before any of them, and in a scientific sense. And the whole issue with Harrington, I've outlined that in my most recent book, The Planet X Update 2020, The Real History of Planet X. I encourage you to read that. But back in the early 2000s, oh my goodness, you had just couldn't believe that this McCanny guy was talking about Planet X. Now NASA is openly looking for Planet X. Isn't that special? And in the true scientific sense, it's all science. It's all sound science looking for Planet X, NASA. Oh my goodness, it's enough to make you puke. Yeah, these people have no conscience. No conscience at all. It's just, anyway, over the top. Okay, enough of that. In the ongoing saga of predictions where NASA and NOAA are going to combine to predict or to pull off a false flag, solar flare, sunspot, some kind of thing where the Earth, is going to be affected, pulling down power grids to affect the election. This continues. This news media, where spaceweather.com is daily talking about, for example, right now there's a sunspot, average sunspot, but they had a seafloor flare, and they talk about this like it's the end of the world. Well, a seafloor flare, kind of like the C4 explosive. That's interesting. But anyway, a C4 solar flare, which is simply a category, and a C flare category is the lowest flare. Those happen daily. So anyway, they're trying to make this sound like the biggest thing since the Harrington event. So anyway, the ongoing push to sensationalize things that have no account at all. Okay, well, anyway, we'll see what happens in the next week or so prior to the election. But I think I'll be very happy when the election's over so we can start getting back to normal. Okay, I have some announcements to make, and I started making these announcements last week. But anyway, I have the ability now on my web checkout page. When you go there, you can pay in 4 installment payments, and all of that is available on the webpage. And with the Grow Towers, you can pay in 12 installments, so you don't have to be set with that that relatively large payment right in the beginning. So for all of my products that have drop-down buttons and add-to-card buttons on my webpage, all of those, when you get to checkout, you have the option to pay in 4 installments. So that's there. And the Grow Towers, of course, you go to a different page to check out those, and you can pay up to 12 months installments. So that's there. Very, very exciting. And I talked about last week also the pricing for the Christmas specials. So if you buy 2 water filters, you get a discount plus some free stuff. If you buy 3, you get some bigger discounts. And along with this 4 times payment, and if you use your own credit card, of course, you can stretch this out over many, many months of payment. But my point last week and my point this week is to go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and look for the Christmas specials where you're going to buy 2 or 3 of an item, and then we will ship that directly to the people that you designate, so you don't have to double ship. We don't ship the 2 or 3 systems to you and then you have to reship them to somebody. We will ship them directly. And so anyway, that's a big deal. And of course, you get discounts, and if you buy enough things, then there's some really nice free things we throw in. And that's the same for the Grow Towers also. So anyway, just starting to plan on a little bit of Christmas or pre-Christmas activity there. And I would encourage you to buy these, say, water filters or Grow Towers. These would be wonderful, wonderful Christmas presents because they're the kind of thing that really matter. You know, I never, ever believed in, you know, like video games or Barbie dolls or, you know, a new stereo system. That's all fine and good, but what people really need today, what they really need, is the water filter. See if they already have a water filter elements, if the education program and the Grow Towers, etc. And I also want to remind you quickly that remember the stainless steel containers for the gravity filters. I've been selling those for literally 20 years. They are not available anymore. They will not be coming back. As far as I can tell right now, you will not see those for sale ever again in the future. So what I've got instead of those is a terracotta earthenware, stoneware container that is just like the stainless steel. One unit, one container fits on top of the other. And it comes with 2 of my GF filter elements, all-in-one filter elements. And, you know, I haven't talked about those for a while, that my filter elements are the made in the United States. By the way, the terracotta containers are made in the United States, very high quality, and people love these. But the terracotta container, you would use 2 filter elements. It comes with 2 filter elements. There's 4 holes, so you would plug 2 of the holes with the plugs that come and then put 2 filter elements and put that in your kitchen. Very nice unit. They're a little more pricey and they cost a little bit more to ship, but we cover that shipping cost in the cost of the unit. But and that's why if you buy a few of these for Christmas presents, like I say, we can ship those directly to your loved ones, your family in different places, and without that double shipping. But the terracotta earthware stoneware containers are very nice, and they fit in any kitchen, whether it's a modern kitchen or a rustic kitchen or even a cabin. It's a perfect unit, and they're the same size. They hold the same amount of water as the stainless steel containers. Okay, so enough of that. Just once again, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. And I want to announce again a little more detail this week on the generators, along with my wing generator business. Of course, for a while I've been selling the shipping containers. These are new, never used shipping containers. You do not want to use used shipping containers for build a house. Some people have it as a storage shed to put their food, or they have an office or a shelter or something like that. You do not want to use used shipping containers because they spray those things with horrific chemicals, and that those chemicals are leaching out because the shipping containers, they get warm on a hot day if they're just sitting there. And so this chemical that kills anything and everything from China, from Japan, from every foreign country in the world, they go and they spray those things with this chemical. I don't even know what it is, but it kills everything, and then it seeps into the cracks, etc. And that stuff's leaching out for years. So you do not, I repeat, you do not want a used shipping container for something that you're going to use, that you're going to go in yourself. So I only sell new, unused shipping containers available at the factory. And then so the latest addition to my product line are generators. And these are either the kind that, say, contractors use, up to 17 kilowatts. They're called portables, air-cooled. And you they go from, real small, 2 kilowatts or even smaller, just little, like if you're at a picnic, little ones, and then they go up to 17 kilowatts. And then I also have the natural gas propane models, and those go up to 24 kilowatts. Actually, they can go up as far as 50 kilowatts. And then there's the industrial diesel ones that'll go up to a megawatt, to really large sizes. So the reason I got this, and I worked quite a while getting arranged so I can sell these generators, is because when I'm speccing out a system for the wing generator, the wind systems that I'm selling, the wing generator, also a lot of people, in fact, most cases, they want a generator backup also. And there, that gives them a bit more security. If the wind's blowing, the batteries are completely discharged, they still have an option to have electricity. And that's and so the idea is that the backup generator is not going to be running very much at all. It's kind of like your house with grid electric. And if you set up a battery system with the wing generator, you typically have enough batteries to get you through quite a few days. And then, of course, if that's going on, you don't run your air conditioner. You don't run, you only run the essential services that you need in your house, your refrigerator, a few lights in the house, and maybe your computer and internet, things like that that are essential. So anyway, the ability now to sell a generator backup, and in some cases, people want to run that generator a bit more, in which case there are the industrial, what they call primary power. And I talked about this last week, that a lot of people bought a home generator backup unit, and those are not meant to run all year long or 24/7. They're meant to run like 12 hours a day when a little bit of power outage occurs, but they're not meant to run day after day after day. Their warranty, for example, is based on the fact that they're not going to run very much at all. And so you might have a different type of alternative energy system, but that generator, if it's a home model, is not meant to be run very much. And then there's the commercial ones, which are bigger, that one might run a store or a building, commercial building, but even those are not meant to run 24/7 for long periods of time. There's another layer of generators, which I've access to also, which are industrial grade. And these are the ones that, say you have a hospital, for example, or say you have a school, or say you have some kind of building where you need power. And if the lights go out, you need power that's going to be there for 2 to 3 weeks or maybe 2 months. Who knows? That's an industrial level power generator, and I have access to those also. So the reason I'm saying this is because it's important, Some people might start out, for example, right now the lead time on the wing generators is around 3 months from the time you make your payment until it's delivered. The generator, it might be something you have on site so that you have electricity to work with, and then when the wing generator comes, you put that in, and now you that's your backup. That's your backup power. But you never know. You might have if you have a long period, say, where there's no wind, your batteries are depleted. You might have a generator requirement where you're running that propane or diesel generator for a number of days or maybe a week. Who knows? So you need you have to spec these out, is what I'm saying. You have to spec these out for the requirement of the customer. And some customers go, oh, I just need one of those home backup ones. Well, no. If you need an industrial grade level generator, then that's what you have to get. You can't, it's like having the right hammer for the right job or the right wrench for the right job. You know, you can't use a little teeny wrench on a big bolt that's really on a machine. You need the right size wrench. You need the right size tool. You need the tool spec for the job. Okay, so enough of that. But the point is that now I have generators available for sale also, and those will be available. There'll be more information on my webpage on those. But basically, they're kind of like the wing generator. It's something that I would spec out for each person. Each person's going to have different requirements. Each person is going to have different monetary needs, and so it's a balancing act of how much do you want to pay versus what do you really need. And the worst thing you can do in a case like, especially with backup power, the worst thing you can do is buy something that's simply not going to work, because that's not a solution either, because you're only going to be mad when you get to the point of needing it and you're going to go, this doesn't work. So you need one that's designed that will work for your needs. Okay, enough of that. On to the main science topic. Okay, so I'm going to go back to this topic of all of a sudden there are 1,200 Jupiter-sized objects floating around our solar system. I mean, get serious. Looking for planet 10 or planet X or planet 9, how about planet 900? How about planet 1201? This is so bizarre that, you know, a few years ago NASA was denying that there even was such a thing, and they had all of the little Trekkies, the Phil Plates of the world, and the people that anonymously write for Wikipedia or Rational Wiki or any of these other ding-dong pages, stating that, for example, I was a crackpot, you know, Planet Xer, all of this. And all of a sudden, NASA is coming out and saying, well, there's not just one. There's like 1,200 of them that are bigger than Jupiter size. So that would mean, since there are fewer of the big ones than small ones, that means that there's tens of thousands of smaller planets, just looking at proportion. So I say if there's 1,200, that's more than 1,000. So, easily there could be 100 or 1,000 times more small ones than there are big ones. So that could mean 10,000, 100,000, a million planets surrounding our solar system, whereas before there were 9. I mean, this is the numbers are so staggering that I'm going to try and put this into perspective, and then add it to the fact that that NASA and its list of clowns on the YouTube videos are talking like, oh yeah, this is just like what we expected, and they're even going to have citizens partake in the search. How that's going to happen? They claim to have millions and millions of photos. Well, these are digital photos, folks. And so they have been obviously taking these photos for decades, looking for Planet X while they were denying that it even existed, but looking for one. And then, lo and behold, they end up discovering 1,200 that are bigger than Jupiter. So, just to put this into perspective, when you were growing up, or even if you took an astronomy course recently, now I taught astronomy at the university level for many years. So now you can imagine how that went over. Here I am in a classroom, you know, under contract to teach what is in the astronomy textbook. And by the way, if you look on my DVDs, my DVD number 1 and 2, there is a video that we produced with VHF, professionally produced. It was in 1991 when I was teaching astronomy at the university level, and I got a grant through the university, state university system, to produce this video. And I had this was back in the old film days, where you had literally film and the editing was done by literally clipping film and putting it together, and then the final piece was recorded and the master made. I had a producer that came in and did this. So you can see the result of that video. So it was professionally done, the music and the timing and the lead-in voice. There was a professional guy who let in, and then I'm sitting there at a desk, and you can see me as a much younger person. Good grief, 1991, that was a few decades ago. But anyway, the video is called Astronomy for the 90s, and it was a textbook study where I had, I think it was around 120 students in my astronomy classes, and they each took a topic and went through this whole list of textbooks. And the way this started is I was in my office at the university, and in the fall of the year before the school started, all of these book vendors, these guys selling textbooks, came into my office and they said, these are the new textbooks that we're offering. And every company, Macmillan, and I mean the whole laundry list of companies had a brand new college level textbook for astronomy. And so I thought, you know, I'm gonna get one of each of these because I can. You know, typically you might pick one or two and choose that for your class. So I got a copy of every one of them. There was like a dozen of them. And so I said, well, now I always had my students do a project. So this time for my project, I set it up so they would divide off in groups, you know, 5 or 10 in a group, and then they would go through all of these textbooks, and each group had a particular topic like Venus or galaxies or, you know, Sun or, you know, Earth or Mars or some topic, astronomical topic. And they would go through all the textbooks to see if they were consistent in the story they told about whatever it was. And so, of course, what they found was that they were consistent, but what they also found is that the editor of one textbook was author of another textbook. And so there was like this little clubhouse of all these astronomers that were writing textbooks for the college level. And some of them were higher powered, some of them had more mathematics, some of them were for the just basic college course that, you know, required astronomy course just for kids that, you know, needed a science, elective in their list of courses, and so they would take astronomy. So there was this wide range of textbooks, and so then I took the compilation of this study and I put it together, and the whole point was that there was a camaraderie, a collusion, if you will, between all of these astronomers to keep the same story and to give the same story. Okay, so anyway, you can go watch that video online, or not online, I mean just you can buy my DVD number 1 and 2 set. It's a set of historically important videos. And the interesting thing is you see me, it's a much younger person than today. And exposing this collusion, you might call it, between the entities in the astronomical world. Okay, So anyway, back to the topic of planet, planet 10 or planet 9 or planet 1201, the statistics of the solar system, let's just look at our own solar system. You have Jupiter is the biggest planet, then Saturn is much smaller. Then you have Uranus and Neptune, smaller yet. Then you have Earth as the next biggest planet. Then you have Mars, then you have Mercury. Venus is the next one from Earth. So it's Earth, Venus, Mars, Mercury, our moon. And in terms of, and then Pluto is very small. It could be a moon of some other planet easily. Okay, so that was the original solar system, but Jupiter by far and away was the biggest planet, and it turns out Jupiter is not really a planet, it's a small star. It's literally a brown dwarf, Jupiter. And that's because what is a brown dwarf? It's like low-level fusion and not enough mass to really light up like a star. So it's basically a brown dwarf is like a little teeny star, and that's what Jupiter literally is. Okay, so anyway, to find out that there are 1,200 of them roaming around near our solar system, now let's take a look at another aspect of this. Do you think that we are the only entity that our solar system, do you think that our solar system is the only entity in the galaxy that has this number of rogue planets floating around it? Well, of course not. But before I start delving into this topic, I want to give you an estimate of size here, and that is that Jupiter, the planet Jupiter, is about 1/1,000th the mass of the Sun. So the Jupiter, if you took the mass of Jupiter, it would take 1,000 Jupiters to equal the mass of the Sun. So that Jupiter is pretty pint size in terms of mass. It's about 1/10th the diameter, but you could fit essentially 1,000 Jupiters inside the Sun, is what we're saying. So if you have 1,200 Jupiter-sized objects floating around outside of our solar system, then that means that you have a mass out there that is equivalent to the mass of the Sun. And so is this a viable gravitational system? Well, they say that the majority of these objects are not associated with orbits. In other words, they're not orbiting the Sun. They're simply kind of just passing by. So they really don't know. They don't know the orbits of these things. They're just being very coy that, what's the probability? Let's look at it this way. What's the probability that one of these 1,200 objects might have an orbit that comes into the solar system somewhere? And maybe even as far as planet Mars or Earth or Venus or in this region of the solar system, what's the probability? And you might say, well, the probability might be pretty good. But then again, we don't know how these things formed. My guess is the following, and this is probably what's going on. Okay, now I've talked about this before, and the region outside of Pluto, in fact, Pluto is one of what we call the Kuiper Belt objects. And when you look around nearby stars, you can see planets forming out in this region, and they're forming typically in circular orbits. And there's a good reason for that. There's a reason why planets in that region form in circular orbits. So just to be clear, just starting out this conversation, it appears that probably none of these would have Earth-crossing orbits or come into the inner solar system even. And the reason is they're forming out in this region. They're forming with circular orbits. One of the aspects of the tail drag of these objects as they form, because they're giant comets, one of the aspects of the tail drag is that that circularizes their orbits. And so the end issue is that probably none of them would be coming into the inner solar system. They could be jarred loose by some kind of gravitational interaction of something passing by. But just to imagine this vast distance, say, between us and the next star, which is, you know, 4.5 light years away, a vast distance, huge distance, to imagine that that is filled with these, you know, these rogue Jupiter-sized planets is not practical. It's not practical. So what they're really seeing are objects that are forming around our own solar system. They don't have an explanation. And so they just say, oh, these are rogue planets. So they don't have an explanation, and they don't understand these issues. And then the funny part about it is NASA has a program to locate one of these objects. So, you know, they don't make any sense, as usual. They've already discovered 1,200, but they're going to go out and look for one of them. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so the whole issue here is that if there's 1,200 big ones, now, the reason I started talking about Jupiter and then the different sizes of the planets, there's another interesting statistic that if you took all the planets in the solar system except Jupiter, so if you took, you know, looking from the inner side of the solar system outwards, if you took Mercury, Venus, Earth, Earth's moon, Mars, then jump out to Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, if you took those and you put them all together, then Jupiter is about 2.5 times that size, and most of that is Saturn. So the point is that looking statistically at the distribution of size of planets, you have one big one, Jupiter. You have one that's pretty much smaller, Saturn. Then you have Uranus and Neptune, which are a lot smaller, than actually just a few times bigger than Earth. Then you have Earth, Venus, and then you have this size. In fact, I talked about this in my paid cast too. If you took all of the moons of the solar system, because Titan is pretty big, Titan is the big moon of Saturn with an atmosphere, etc. So if you took all the planets and moons of the solar system and you put them in a line from smallest to biggest, you'd have kind of a steady progression from smallest to largest. And if you were to look at the masses, it would be, if you were just looking at diameters, it would be linear. If you were looking at masses, it would be a cube of power of 3, because the mass goes as the cube of the radius. So anyway, just a little bit of mathematics there. But the point is that there's a distribution. You really don't have any that are exactly the same size. And so if you have one Jupiter object here, and then this distribution going down to the very smallest, say, planetoids, okay, now take that distribution of sizes and apply it out in this region beyond Pluto, where you've got 1,200 Jupiter-sized objects, and they're balanced kind of around this donut ring that extends out from the solar system. You have basically 1,200 of these objects orbiting the sun, equivalent to the mass of the sun, but they kind of balance. If you had one object, if these things were all accumulated, then you'd have one object out there equivalent to the sun, and all of the rest of these smaller ones really wouldn't add up to a hill of beans, because of the knowledge that when you look at Jupiter and you look at all the other planets don't even add up to anything close to Jupiter. So the most of the mass out there is in these maybe 1,200 objects. Maybe there's 10,000 of them. We really don't know, because NASA ain't talking. They're saying that, oh, you should go out and discover these. And the point I was making before is that they have 1,200 of these discovered, and they have digital photography, so this is something a computer should be doing. It's kind of ridiculous to ask all of you people out there to look at these photographs to see if you can identify some Planet X objects when this is all digital material, and it could easily be done in a fortnight, in a couple weeks, with digital processing. Okay, so just to summarize where we've been, the imagination or the belief that somehow all of outer space, all of the galaxy space, is filled with just gazillions of these brown dwarfs, things the size of Jupiter, that have no home, is beyond absurd. That would, at the ratio we're looking at here, at 1,000 of those to one sun, then NASA has already discovered more than a solar mass of these planets floating around out there. And like I said, if you look at the mass distribution in the solar system, the majority of mass is contained in just Jupiter, one object. And all of the rest of the little stuff, including Earth, Earth's moon, and even Saturn, they don't hold a hill of beans. So basically, these 1,200 items have the majority of mass out there, and let's say that they've only found 20% of them. So that means 5 times 1,200, so we're talking 6,000 of these objects out there. And like I said, to imagine that the entire galaxy is filled to this level with rogue brown dwarfs is absurd. So let me take a little bit of a caveat here, little sideline, and we're going to talk about how you examine photographs to discover these objects. And so the way it's done is you take photographs of a portion of the sky from the vantage point of Earth, and then next year at the very same time you take another picture of that area of the sky. And what happens? If there's an object that's close to us, and there, some of the stars are even close enough to us where this technique works, is that they move a little bit. They move a little bit in relation to the background stars. In other words, the stars that are really distant do not move in the photograph, but the ones that are close do move. And so that's how basically you discover that. But then also, these brown dwarf objects are extremely faint because they do not have their own sunlight. They do not create light on their own. They give off some infrared, like Jupiter, but that's very low, and of course, that's hard to sort out in the infrared background of outer space. So you watch for this movement, and that's what they're telling people that they should do, is take these photographs and see if there's anything that has moved from one photograph to the next, a year apart, 10 years apart, 20 years apart, etc. And like I said, this is all digital. So the computers could do this to compare two photos in a matter of a couple, you know, maybe less than a second. And they want people to go out. And so this is called busy work. This is NASA giving little assignments out to the public to go out and do this busy work, which is not necessary to make people think that they're really doing something. And the way they promote this in these stupid videos is that you're really doing something important. No, you're frankly not. You're wasting your time, and that's what they want you to do. They want you to run around looking at all these photos, thinking you're doing great science, when in fact they're just creating busy work. It's like when you were in third grade and you acted up. The teacher made you write 200 times, I will not act up. That's busy work. That's what you do to somebody when you don't want them to bother you. So that's what NASA's doing. I mean, this is just a big joke. Okay, so now that you understand that these objects are, in fact, orbiting our sun, they're part of our solar system, these objects are forming out there because, in my theoretical work, the solar wind blows back a cloud of dust and gas. I call it the nebular ion cloud, which is out there, way out there. It's not the end. That's the other side of the solar capacitor. That's the positive side of the solar capacitor. The sun is the negative side of the capacitor. And so there's plenty of material out there. And you, in fact, see this, for example, with Pluto, one of the innermost of the Kuiper Belt objects. And it was one planet that was discovered, 1933? Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto with a designed search. They were looking for Planet X, by the way, and I have my recent book, Planet X Update 2020, goes into this with some of the supportive material, etc. But Clyde Tombaugh was looking for this Planet X object, which is a big object, and he found Pluto, and they almost immediately realized that this is not a Planet X object, this is another planet. And so, interestingly enough, Clyde Tombaugh reached almost sainthood in the astronomical community. But when Robert Harrington of the Naval Observatory actually discovered Planet X, he was, well, I'll just say it with my belief, he was murdered for wanting to go public with that information. All of that information is in my book, with all of the details of how the CIA in 1991 took over NASA, all of the details. I'm not going to rehash that here. But why? Because I'm not going to rehash that. You have to go read the book to understand what happened there. And that book is included in my library sets. If you already have my library sets, you can buy it separately for $9.95. Minimal price, which just covers kind of the cost of handling. It's an ebook, by the way. Okay, so the planets that they're seeing, these 1,200 planets, are forming in this nebular ion cloud, and they're the big ones. So for every big one, let's say, just like our solar system, how many moons are there in the solar system? Saturn alone has 27, Jupiter has a few score. And so if you add up all the moons in the solar system, let's say that there's 100 significant objects in the solar system that are smaller than Jupiter. So there's 100-to-1 ratio of small items compared to the brown dwarfs. So that's 100 times 1,200, so that's 120,000 objects out there that are, you can estimate, make the estimate that that's about how many there are. 1,200 times 100 would be 120,000. So just rough estimate, just a very rough estimate. There's about 120,000 planets orbiting our sun out there with a total mass of about our sun. And there, if you understand how gravity works, they're evenly distributed around our sun. So our sun looks like it's sitting there kind of in this pocket of material that's forming into planets. And like I said before, the tail drag that is part of the discharge, part of the formation of the planet process, the discharge of the solar capacitor, or these comets. And by the way, you can see these comets. You can see them around other stars, other nearby stars, where you also see the infrared signature of the cloud surrounding the star, and you see these objects forming with the comet tails. So, unless some foreign object probably the size of our sun, unless something came by close and disrupted these orbits, they're going to stay the same. And so the probability of something the size of our sun coming by that close to our solar system, it hasn't happened in easily billions of years, if it ever did happen. And so the disruption of these objects is simply, they're going to stay in their circular orbits. And even if they began as elliptical orbits, then their orbits would be circularized because of the tail drag. So that gives you a pretty clear picture of what's going on here. And like I said, the joke is the NASA is looking for one. They call it Planet 9. They demoted Pluto from being a planet, so there were only 8 planets, and now the search is for Planet 9, not Planet 10 or Planet X. All kinds of maneuvering out there. But like I said, isn't it bizarre that NASA, and especially NASA Trekkies, the NASA outreach people, spent a lot of years dispelling this myth of Planet X, and now all of a sudden NASA's out there looking for it and claiming that it's real, and they're on a, they're on a beeline to find it, and this is great science now. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, as they say. That's a great line. I don't know whoever came up with that line. You can't even make this stuff up. It's so insane. But the reason I'm talking about this is I want to give you the real science behind what they're discovering here. Now, if you look at Pluto, when they arrived at Pluto with the New Horizons spacecraft, from a distance you could see Pluto's comet tail. In Charon, it's its moon, its largest of, I believe, five moons now. That Charon also had a comet tail formed around it. And you can see the material coming in and raining into the atmosphere of Pluto. And it's literally snowing. So you have nitrogen compounds, complex organic compounds raining in and literally turning into snow. And you can see the layering of the snow coming into the atmosphere of Pluto. And so Pluto is literally a comet. It's still in formation. And it's this ice pack is forming on the surface. And then you see the bubbling action because of the internal heat of Pluto. So there's heat of formation going on here in Pluto. And Pluto is just an example of a Kuiper Belt object. So are these planets? Yes, in every sense of the word. Pluto is a planet. Demoting Pluto was a stupid move. And ultimately, in the long-term vision of astronomy, it will turn out to be a really stupid move. People are going to understand that it was nothing more than a gesture to try and hide the fact that there's lots more planets out there, a lot more planets. Now let's talk about planets that could come in like Hale-Bopp, which came in on a 4,200-year orbit, and that was literally, well, read my book, Planet X. I talk all about that. Not going to repeat it here. There are objects that could potentially come into the solar system, and we do not have record. That's why the Colbran is such a valuable book. And by the way, somebody sent me this last week. This is interesting. I'll be posting it on my webpage, and I have two historically important interviews that I have now in my possession. One is an old Alex Merklinger interview. It's a 3-hour interview dealing with the Colbran. So I'll be posting that, and I'm archiving. I'm doing a lot of work in the background to archive my information. So that's one of them. The other one is an interview I did. That was my last interview with Pastor Peter J. Peters, and it was about prime numbers and the use of prime numbers to plan things like 9/11 and the Fukushima earthquake, etc., which is a man-made earthquake. Okay, so I've got about 30 seconds to go here. Remember to go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. The water filters sail for Christmas. Buy two or three. We send them to wherever you want. The grow towers are there, amazing products so you can grow vegetables in your own house. The wing generators, the shipping containers, now the generator lines. So go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.